Greetings and welcome to the AVOD. I'm Count Vargelon.
I'm DM.
And oh boy, did we watch two movies tonight!
Sure did.
But before we get to that, we have some random crap to address that I think has been long overdue.
What?
Nah, I'm just being dramatic. First off, video games. I just want to tell everybody that if you're... I did get one of those Xboxes and one of those new PlayStations. And if you're wondering, should you grab one right away? I think the answer is, unless you're really, really, really excited about the new Dark Souls game. So I don't know if... Are you familiar with the Dark Souls franchise?
Not really.
Okay. Well, they're a popular franchise of games. Blah, 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 blah. But they started out with a game called Demon's Souls that was just on the PlayStation 3. And then the sequel to that was Dark Souls, and that went everywhere. So they've taken the original one from PlayStation 3 and they've completely remade it. And it's gorgeous now on the PlayStation 5. But unless you're a huge fan of that franchise, which is a pretty alienating and hard to get into franchise, I would say that you don't really need to rush out and get one of these, like, at all. Because there are no launch exclusives that are particularly good on either PlayStation 5 or on Xbox Series X or S. It's nice to not have to deal with waiting times anymore. Like, everything loads instantaneously because they all have solid-state hard drives. But that's really the only huge advantage they have over the systems you likely already have. So I'm saying, I know it's going to be stressful because everyone wants one for Christmas and there's very limited supplies, but the games just aren't there yet that you should feel like it's a necessity to run out and buy one.
Right.
So
okay.
Putting that out there, they're good. They're both really good systems. The controllers are great, easy to set up. The Xbox, I haven't owned an Xbox in 2 years, but literally the minute I, like, typed my name and password for my old Xbox account into the new Xbox, it loaded up my entire library and the desktop I had had on my Xbox before I got rid of it. Like, it was as if I was turning on my old Xbox again. That's how smooth the process was. It was very neat. But yeah, like, the games aren't there yet, so if you want to wait till, like, February, March when the good games start coming out, I mean, it makes a lot of sense, both financially and, honestly, there's just nothing, wow, I've got to get that so I can show it off, yet.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, next up, I believe you watched a TV show?
Yeah, so, watched The Truth Seekers.
What's that?
You don't know about this?
Oh, right. The new one with, the new one that, Edgar Wright made with his friends. And, it's about ghost hunters in England. Yes, yes.
Oh my God. You are so bad at this.
I forgot
Nick
that
Frost.
Nick Frost. Thank you. Ugh. Nick Frost. Yes. I forgot what it was called. Sorry. Yes. I have heard of it. I haven't watched it yet. How is it?
It's great.
Oh, yay.
Oh, it's so good.
I'm so happy. I love Nick Frost so much.
Yeah. It's really, really good. It's funny and it's fun and it's heartfelt. And the episode, I think the longest episode is like 35 minutes.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. No, it's really, really good.
Gets in, gets out, and is just hilarious.
I would say it's hilarious, okay. But it's just a lot of fun to watch. It's a fun story. There's all kinds of stuff going on.
Yay.
I'm really looking forward to the next season because there has to be.
Oh, we're talking about like season. Cliffhanger ending kind of thing?
It's not really a cliffhanger. Like, it wraps up, but then something happens. You're like, oh.
Oh, okay. So there's definitely more to the story.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. So,
all right. Don't
really
say
good.
Anything.
I thoroughly recommend it.
That's fantastic. Yay.
Yeah.
And how many episodes is it?
I want to say 8.
Okay. All right. So it's a solid season length, half an hour each. You can blast through it in an afternoon if you want to.
Yep.
Okay. All right. I'm very excited now to check it out since someone has confirmed for me that it's high quality.
Yeah.
Next up, a trivia quiz. And yes, I have carefully selected a card that has no mention of martyrs.
Okay.
The Birds lacked what conventional film element?
The Birds or the Burbs?
The Birds, 1968.
Okay. I haven't seen The Birds.
You haven't seen? Oh, so much
lacked
fun.
A conventional film element?
Yeah. So, like, what if there were no actors in The Birds. I mean, there were actors in The Birds. That's not the answer.
I know that much.
Okay. But that kind of thing, like a thing that most movies have, but this one didn't have.
A musical score?
That is correct.
Oh!
By the way, they even wrote musical score, not just score. So way to go. You got it exactly right. Bravo.
Thanks.
For a movie you haven't seen, too.
Yeah.
What horror legend played Samson Dunstan in the opening scene of Hatchet?
God.
Should be witch, not what horror legend, but anyway.
Yeah. Is this someone I've heard of?
Yes, it's a famous horror actor.
Shit.
You gotta remember, it's Adam Green, so he's gonna call in every favor he can do to, you know.
I saw Hatchet once. I think it might have been in theaters even, and I hated it.
Oh, it's not a good movie, but it did have a famous horror actor right at the start. Right.
Let me think. Famous horror actor, How old is this person?
At this point, 2006, I would say he was in his... Damn it, I just gave away it was a he. Anyway,
the character's name was Samson.
Oh yeah, I guess that's a really good point. 2006, so that actor would have been in his early 60s, I would say.
Oh, man.
Maybe mid-60s. I don't know exactly how old he is, but mid-60s, probably.
Is this person still alive?
Yes. I'll give you a hint. It's not Lance Henriksen.
I wasn't even thinking that.
Okay. Just putting that out there, it's not Lance Henriksen.
I got...
Remember, Kane Hodder plays the villain, so it can't be Kane Hodder.
I was going to say Kane Hodder, yeah, like I'm pretty sure Kane Hodder. Not it.
He actually plays the villain, so can't be Kane Hodder.
Shoot.
It's a tough one.
It is a tough one.
Let's take a guess. Horror legend.
Robert Englund.
Yes.
Oh! Really?
Yes! Yeah, it wasn't Brad Dourif. Sorry. It was Robert Englund, which is, I think, really the only two people it could have been.
There you
go. Christopher Lee portrayed which character in The Wicker Man?
Like, I need the character's name.
You actually don't need the character's name, because the character had a title.
Oh.
And was only known by his title.
Oh, no. It's not coming to me.
All right, I'll just move on then. The answer? Lord Summerisle.
Right, he's going to be like the head of the cult.
Well, I mean,
that's
he
what
is.
I was going to say.
But yeah, he was Lord Summerisle because it's all set on Summerisle. All right. What actor portrayed both Lucas and Jeffrey in Mama?
I don't know.
You don't remember?
Don't ask me questions about a movie I've never seen.
Again, a movie you pretend not to have seen.
I'm not pretending.
This is so insane. Like, I never thought I would see the Mandela effect in real life. But even though there's like... Well, it is, because you're living in a world where you didn't see the movie Mama, whereas we can listen to a podcast of you talking about your experience of seeing the movie Mama. And that is a Mandela effect thing, because you are... saying, no, I live in a different reality than the observed one of the rest of us.
Mandela effect, the shared delusion.
Well, you're right, but I mean, you're still saying...
Collective misremembering.
Well, no, but I mean, this isn't a collective, this is a solo misremembering, but it's, you know, you're as vitriolic as the Shazam people about this, and you're even wronger about it. because again... We could just listen to the tape of you talking about it. It's Nikolai Coster-Waldau. Who has been a credited writer on every film in the Child's Play series from 1988 to 2017? Obviously not on the remake. Wrote
the guy whose name I don't remember.
It's Don Mancini.
Ah, damn it! I was never gonna get there.
No, it's okay. In Eyes Without a Face, what is the term for the procedure involving transferring living tissue from one person to another?
transplant?
Yeah, you're never going to get this, so I'm just going to tell you. Heterografting, because it's grafting from one person to another. Yeah, okay, that was a pretty big stretch, I know. Asking you to know that one was, yeah, that was kind of cruel on my part. All right, let's move on to a list.
Yeah, okay, so...
We had a little trouble finding a list this week.
We had a really hard time finding a list this week. So we've come up with 13 scariest mockumentaries ever made from 2014.
So, yeah, okay, they're going to be missing out a lot if it's stopping back then. But, all right, hit me with it. Let's do it.
Okay, so I think this is chronological.
Okay.
And we begin with The War Game from 1965.
I have not seen The War Game.
Don't know anything about this.
Okay.
Says, you'll be amazed at how chilling this extremely controversial UK television movie can be.
All right. That's all we know?
It uses news/documentary format to package a grim and horrifying scenario in which Cold War tensions finally ignite into a thermonuclear exchange over Europe.
Damn, that does sound bleak.
Yeah.
All right. Next up.
Next up is Punishment Park.
I was hoping Punishment Park was going to be on this.
I don't know.
Punishment Park's amazing. Oh, okay. Well, I'll stop talking and let you say what they have to say about it.
Experimental film set in a fictional dystopia where protesters are labeled traitors by the state and rounded up into camps. How is this a mockumentary?
Because it's done as if it's like a British documentary coming to America to like film how all of the anti-war people get rounded up and done a version of like The Long Walk from that Richard Bachman book where they like have to run across the desert for 3 days.
Now, The Long Walk is published in a Stephen King collection, not
Bachman. Oh, I thought it was Bachman first.
No, not that I know. I had it in just like a collection of
Stephen King stories. I'm probably wrong about that because you generally know more about Stephen King than I do. I would not try to fight your Stephen King knowledge. So I'm going to assume you're right about this one.
I don't know that much about him. I'm just telling you my experiences with The Long Walk.
Oh, no, totally. But anyway, no, it's that kind of thing. And so they're like run through the desert and of course, it's specifically set up that there's no way they can win because the whole point is to show protesters that they can't fight the government. And there's like interviews with the protesters and the radicals and there's interviews with the guards. And it's like just a really, really chilling, well-made mockumentary. It's fantastic.
Oh, okay.
Punishment Park.
Says here it's more than a little preachy.
Oh, incredibly preachy. 100%. It's just really well-made.
Okay. After that, we have, this movie is not scary.
What?
The Legend of Boggy Creek.
It's not scary at all.
Like, it's a little tense at times, but it is not scary.
No, that's not a scary movie. It's a fun movie. I really like The Legend of Boggy Creek, but that's not a scary movie.
No.
Come on. All right, go.
Okay, after that, we have, oh, Ghost Watch.
The best mockumentary really? Ever made.
We skip from 1972 to 1992.
Damn! 20 years without a decent mockumentary that was at all scary?
Wow.
Yeah, that's a bold statement, guys. I mean, I can't say anything to contradict it off the top of my head, but wow.
Yeah.
Geez. All right.
Okay, also from 1992, we have Man Bites Dog.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's just a very good mockumentary. And that's you want to ruin your day, you know? It's like the fastest way to do it is watch Man Bites Dog. Ugh. It's bleak as hell. All right. Next.
Okay, after that, we have The Last Broadcast.
Oh, cool. I'm glad it made it on there.
Great movie. Yeah. Just don't watch the last 5 minutes.
The last 5 minutes. I know, that's a problem. I feel like we should have an official, like, version of The Last Broadcast where we just, like, sell it and cut off the last 5 minutes, or, like, upload The Last Broadcast to YouTube, but without the last 5 minutes, and pretend that's the real movie.
That's a great idea.
Actually, yeah, I don't know why I didn't think of that. All right, that's a project we might be doing.
All right.
All right.
Okay, next is, this has been on a few lists.
What is it?
Noroi the Curse. I didn't know it was a mockumentary. Oh.
I've heard of it. I've never seen it. And
it's because
100%...
it's been on other lists we've done. It's a Japanese film.
Okay. And it's a mockumentary. Huh.
I guess so.
Neat. What do they say?
It says, slipped under the international radar. Blah, blah, blah. Noroi is a surprisingly subtle slow burn in which a documentary director investigates a psychic child's disappearance, which may be linked to a creepy reclusive woman and a demon said to dwell within a submerged village.
That sounds really cool, and we should probably finally check this out.
Yeah, I think so.
All right. We'll track down a copy of Noroi the Curse and give that a look, because that sounds really good.
Yeah, right?
All right. Next.
Okay, next is Headcase.
What's Headcase?
Oh, one of the more extreme entries on this list. This gritty production may not depict as much on-screen violence, but the naked sadism of the psychopathic subjects is so realistically horrifying that it's nearly impossible to watch some scenes without flinching.
Jesus.
I don't know. I went through a phase where I really tested myself in terms of what I could sit through.
Yeah.
I think I'm over that now.
Me too. Like, right? I know I could watch this. I know I can make it from the beginning to end. But is it worth doing? Am I going to get anything out of it?
Well, probably not.
Probably not.
I mean, I didn't before. Why would I now?
What year was this one?
2007.
Oh, okay. So there's still time for Long Pigs to make it onto the list.
Well, funny you should say that.
Next thing, Long Pigs. Well, we've talked about it here on the show before. It's really good.
Which is also 2007.
Oh, wow. I thought it was later than that, because we watched it later than that. But I guess we didn't watch it when it was brand new. No, I love this movie. I think this movie is really
good. Long Pigs is a good movie, but don't, for the love of God, watch Long Pig.
Oh,
do
God,
not
no.
Be confused. You want Long Pig.
Thank you for reminding me about Long Pig. God, what was that movie even about?
Stay the hell away from Long Pig.
I'm trying to remember, like, because it was this weird thing where it's a slasher movie about people, like, getting eaten, but it's also, like, got way too much plot about,
no,
like,
it's
a land
to be
deal?
A commentary about
environmental stuff?
Environmental
or like animal treatment of animals, like what?
Something along those, or just like a anti-industry commentary and how industry, I guess, destroys humanity, some shit like that.
Yeah. Oh God, it was just so preachy and so awful.
Yeah, to the point where like the movie needed like another movie tacked onto it to explain the point of the film.
I know. Oh, yeah. Long Pig is terrible. Long Pig's fantastic. Like, really good. Yes. Gross. It is gross. But.
What's about a cannibal?
I know, but it is explicit about the cannibalism is what I'm trying to say.
Yes.
In
but
a way
also,
that.
Also, like,
a
he's
lot of...
very upfront about it too. Like, he's not coy. Oh, yeah. He's like, yep, I eat people.
Yeah.
I kill sex workers and I eat them.
Yeah. And he's, as you say, he's completely upfront about it and. It's about who he is as a person. It's not about glorifying or reveling in the crimes he commits.
It's just all there in front of you.
Yeah. You will see all of it, but it's not for the purposes of exploitation.
Yeah.
All right. So, yeah, Long Pig's a really great movie.
Another movie from 2007 that isn't really great is The Poughkeepsie Tapes.
Such a bad movie. I
hated this movie.
And the weird part is, it's like, oh, it was banned for, it was, you know, it couldn't get a distributor because it was too intense. I'm like, are you sure the distributors didn't just watch it? Because I feel like what might have happened is they just watched the movie and didn't want to be associated with it. I think there's a pretty good chance that's actually what happened with the Poughkeepsie Tapes. I hate that movie so much. Oh, such a waste of everybody's time. But please let me know what the list says about it.
Okay. Hold on. I scrolled down. All right.
Sorry.
Unlike other serial killer titles on this list, the unseen villain at the heart of this gruesome tale, presented as an unsolved mystery-style investigative program, has no charming qualities to lighten the proceedings. Our subject, only known as the Walter Street Butcher, Water Street Butcher, is a totally inhuman monster whose sadism is unlike anything ever depicted on camera. There's little on-screen violence, but it's the butcher's manipulation of his victims and the investigators that will have you installing new deadbolts on your doors. While the experts interviewed throughout the film are a mixed bag of performers, the killer himself is so unrelentingly evil that his vile deeds, which he films for posterity, practically pry your eyes open and force you to watch.
We have a very different feeling about this movie than this guy.
God.
Not even close.
Nope. Wow.
All right. Really, and the weird part is, this has been a really good list so far. Like, a lot of essential titles on this list, but now I gotta question this guy's whole taste. All right, let's move on.
It's about to get better, because next on the list is Lake Mungo.
Oh, literally the best mockumentary ever made.
The picture they chose...
giant spoiler.
Ruins the movie.
No!
What
are you doing?
Of course, you'd only know that if you'd seen the movie.
That's true. And I guess you could see that picture and, like, not understand the significance of it until it happens. But it's like...
other pictures you could put up here.
Oh, yeah. Such a powerful moment in the movie. And it's such a surprise.
Yep.
God, I love Lake Mungo.
Great movie.
An amazing movie. All right.
Okay, next. Have we seen this? No, we haven't. The Fourth Kind.
Did we see The Fourth Kind? We're going to have to, like, check. Because that's the one with Mila Jovovich, and she's fake plant, and it pretends it's a docudrama about a real-life woman's experiences. And so Mila Jovovich is playing the fake real-life woman, but they also show interview clips with the real-life woman, right?
I don't know. It just, like, it says Mila Jovovich is in it. I thought this was...
What?
I don't know. Is this one, like, with the owl? Someone's afraid of an owl?
No, it's just about alien abduction in Alaska. Maybe there was an owl in it. There might have been an owl involved. I don't remember it that well. I just remember all the scenes where they're interviewing the quote-unquote real woman who Mila Jovovich is playing.
Uh-huh.
And it's like a fake
docudrama. Honestly don't know if I've seen this.
Okay. Where, like, I definitely have seen it, but I don't know if you've seen it. I don't know if we covered it on
the show.
But
the picture doesn't look familiar to me, so maybe I haven't.
It's
anyway.
Possible you haven't.
Whatever. Moving on.
Please.
The Tunnel.
What's The Tunnel?
I feel like we should see this.
Okay.
Australian. Like a subterranean version of Wreck. Sticks more closely to the documentary format. I don't know. Wreck, I thought, was pretty good at being
a fake
documentary.
That's found footage, not a documentary.
Well, I think this is also found footage.
Oh, okay.
This simple premise finds a journalist and her team delving deep into a network of abandoned tunnels beneath Sydney to determine why the government has apparently hushed up the disappearances of several homeless people who took up residence within the concrete labyrinth.
Damn, that sounds like a lot of fun. Yeah, I'd be there for that.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, something for us to check out. All right, next up.
So it's on the list, but there's some runners up here that say, not scary, but still awesome.
All right.
Okay, you had, like, Legend of Boggy Creek. That's not scary.
Yeah, but, you know.
So these runners up are really good.
What are they?
Behind the Mask.
Yeah, why wasn't that on the list?
Incident at Loch Ness.
I love that movie.
Es and Man, which I haven't seen.
Neither have I.
Troll Hunter.
So this guy's got incredible taste other than the Poughkeepsie tapes. And why aren't these on the list? Just make a longer list, dude.
Well, because I guess he didn't find them scary.
Ugh. Your taste is very strange. By the way, maybe not scary, but Troll Hunter is really intense.
It is.
Like, they're really hugely freaky scenes in that movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would call that movie scary without any hesitation.
And it sounds like this Headcase one is just gross.
Yeah. Hmm.
Not actually scary.
All right, well,
I wouldn't say Man Bites Dog is scary.
Oh, it's not scary at all. It's just, again, it will ruin your day. That's what it's for. It's just bleak. Anyway, but yeah, no, really good list this time. I'm comfortable saying that this is a really good list, except for that one entry we kind of majorly disagree with.
Sure. Okay.
All right. So way to go, way to go, guy. I'm very impressed. I wasn't at the start, but you really won me over. I think really, and it's not really hard for him to do though, because I do adore mockumentaries so much. I mean, I think they're one of my favorite genres of horror films. And it makes me wonder, are they going to keep making those?
I certainly hope so, but I wouldn't know for sure because this week's upcoming horror movie is called Cyst.
Cyst, like C-Y-S-T?
Yes.
Ew.
Cyst is an old-school monster movie in which an enthusiastic plastic surgeon will stop at nothing to patent his latest cyst removal machine.
Oh.
What starts out as Patricia the Nurse's last day turns into a battle for survival when the doctor's machine inadvertently turns a patient's tumor into a cyst monster that terrorizes the office.
Oh my god! First of
all, you don't need a machine to remove cysts.
No, you don't. You have knives for that. but this sounds kind of hilarious. Is it a comedy?
I certainly hope so.
Yeah.
Yes, it's categorized under creatures and comedy.
Okay, good. Because that does sound like it could be a lot of fun.
It is awaiting release.
Oh, okay. Any information about the people involved? Or? Okay,
no, damn. Nothing.
Well, I'm still cautiously optimistic that Cyst is going to be entertaining. So there you go. I am mildly entertained by the concept of Cyst. I hope it turns out to be good. But speaking of things that I had hoped would turn out to be good, let's start talking about this week's movies.
Oh my god. So this week we watched two fake news broadcasts. Like, in the same vein as Ghostwatch.
Yeah.
And the first one is from 1983.
Mm-hmm.
And it's called Without Warning.
No, 83 is Special Bulletin.
Oh, sorry. Special Bulletin.
Yeah, no, I gave you the wrong name last time. That one's on me, everybody. The one from 83 is called Special Bulletin.
And Without Warning is 94.
Yeah.
Right, okay, Special Bulletin then.
Yes.
A news broadcast closely follows the developing story of a city held hostage under threat of a nuclear strike. Although it's not a strike, it's just an explosion.
Yeah.
I actually kind of enjoyed this.
I really enjoyed this. I think this is a genuinely really good movie, and I'm not surprised because you know who wrote and directed it?
Who?
Ed Zwick, the guy who made Glory, 30-something, The Siege, Last Samurai. Like, this is made by a famous writer-director. Like a legit famous, talented guy who you would not expect to see on the name of a movie like this. But this is part of that, we're making movies because we're worried about nuclear annihilation back in the 80s thing, like The Day After and Strands and things like that. Threads, not Strands, thank you. Threads. Yeah, I can't imagine how I made that mistake. But anyway, like bleak movies about how devastating the prospect of nuclear annihilation is. And I think this one's pretty damn good.
This is pretty good. It kind of falls apart a little at the end.
A little.
But up until that, yeah, it's pretty good. I was expecting, I'll be honest, I was expecting a little bit more from the unknown hostage guy.
Yeah, one of the four hostage takers is a guy, who's mysterious. So, like, to explain the premise, a group of nuclear physicists and some of their, politically aligned helpers build themselves a nuclear bomb big enough to blow up Charleston, South Carolina.
Yes.
And if they don't, and they say, you have 24 hours to deliver us all of the detonators from all of the nuclear weapons in South Carolina.
Yes, they are disarmament.
Yeah. Folks. And if you don't, we are going to blow up Charleston, South Carolina.
Yeah.
Yeah. And because they figure if they can, and their plan is, if they can force the United States government to start disarming, then Russia will start disarming as well, and it will become like a tide of disarmament that neither side can stop.
I mean, it's a nice idea, but so fundamentally flawed.
I know. I mean, it's a really good idea. They're obviously on the right side of the issue. Like, there's no question of that. They're just going about it in arguably a pretty wrong way.
I say the most wrong way.
One of the most wrong ways.
I demand nuclear disarmament, and if you don't disarm, then I'm gonna blow you up with a nuclear bomb. It's like, what? What?
And I mean, yeah, but the thing is, I think the film does a good job of explaining how they got that far. Because, you know, they want to, like, because the idea of the characters is they feel like people don't understand just horrific this is. And they think that if there's the threat of there actually being a bomb going on American soil, it will shock people out of their complacency and realize that these weapons are inherently evil and they need to get rid of all of them.
Yes.
And let's just say, that's not the kind of crap Reagan's going to be putting up with.
Well, it also just, like, and you get the sense that just the normal everyday person, just, like, they do not understand.
Yeah.
And it, like, and they simply, like, they can't. They fundamentally cannot understand how devastating a nuclear bomb can be. Like, it is not within their power.
Yeah.
To do,
like,
so.
You just can't wrap your head around the idea of how apocalyptic
it is. No, and so threatening a city with a nuclear bomb, just, like, it doesn't, you're not going to get anywhere with that because nobody cares.
No, because that idea can't exist within people's heads.
Yeah.
Like, they can't picture that level of devastation.
Yeah.
Even if you have a clip of someone who was at Hiroshima talking about it.
Well, they do. They actually
I know, and that's what I'm saying.
Talking about it.
And that's a really good scene. Mm-hmm. Right? Yeah, but it's like, even if you hear someone talking about it, like, it's such a horrific thing that you can't picture it, and you know, it's hard to make it change your mind. I mean, famously, like, you need to see it in a movie, like, you need to see it depicted, or else you can't get your head around it, which is why, famously, like, the thing that was most responsible for moving Reagan towards disarmament, this is true, is him watching The Day After on TV. Mm-hmm. He watched The Day After on TV, and afterwards he was like, wow, maybe we should do something about these nukes. And I wish you didn't need a movie to teach the president how serious this was.
Wow.
But, I mean, look at which president it was, right? He only understood stuff through a filter of fiction, just as a person.
Well, that's because he was a movie star.
It's true. But it's actually a fun fact. Like, in the later years of his presidency, he couldn't, like, read and understand things. So every time there was an issue. What's that? Oh, yeah, he had Alzheimer's. Exactly. Well, no, but I didn't get into that. But it's true. He couldn't read or understand, you know, his briefings anymore. So what they would do is they would make, like, 12-minute mini documentaries for him to watch about whatever the issue he was supposed to be speaking on later was. Mm-hmm. So there was, like, a whole film production crew in the White House making short documentaries so the president could understand the issues.
Jesus.
Yeah, it's really scary, the later years of the Reagan presidency. It was a terrifying time for America. And we didn't find out how terrifying it was until people wrote books about it later on. But yeah, he was a disgrace to the nation, pretty much. You probably shouldn't let someone with Alzheimer's keep being president. You know, general note to America in the future. But anyway, like, I really loved the cast in this. I think
everyone did a great job. It's like, they do a good job recreating this fake news broadcast.
Yeah. Like, the lead guy is, Palmer from The Thing. The lead, nuclear physicist is Palmer from The Thing. Yeah, no, I knew it. I know it. I recognized him right away. And the guy who built the bomb is David Rashi, who, of course, would go on to play Sledgehammer on one of my favorite TV shows, Sledgehammer. And God, like,
he was good. And I thought there was, like, a good turning point with his character.
Oh, there was. Oh, yeah. God, when he, like,
when he finds out what's going on with him.
I know. Oh, God. Yeah. People can watch this. I don't want to give away everything. Because people can just watch this on YouTube, and it's only 90 minutes long, and I really think it's worth doing. Because it's a really good drama, and like you said, they do such a good job of faking what a news broadcast would be like. But, notably, the next movie we're going to talk about is Real Time, just like Ghostwatch is Real Time. This one isn't. This one is set over, like, 24, 30 hours. because it starts with them having a clock for giving a, give us a day. You know, we give you a day to hand over the nuclear, what do you call it? The detonators.
Detonators.
Yeah.
And then you have 2 hours after that.
Yeah. Then you have 2 hours after that because we need to go out to sea to dispose of them. And then we will turn ourselves in and disarm the bomb and turn ourselves in. Mm-hmm. And like, they cut, I mean, it's only 90 minutes, but you see the, but you see like basically a realistic way that the news organization would cover this over that amount of time. Because like we're, cause they do the thing where they come back the next day and they catch us up on the story and what events have happened. It's like, while we were off, so and so thing happened. Like, it really feels authentic to what a news broadcast would be like in this situation. Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I was very impressed by this movie. And yeah. I had never heard of it until quite recently. And I'm like, I'm sad I, you know, slept on this one for so long. Because, wow, I wish I had seen it earlier. Because it does a really great job. And I gotta say, I think it's hard to end something like this right.
Yes. Well, especially with the ending they go for.
Yeah. And I think they did the best they possibly could.
I guess so. It's very hard to talk about the ending of the movie without completely ruining it.
Yeah, and I don't want to spoil this for people.
Yeah.
Because it is really good and is watchable. But let's just say, I don't think you're going to be completely satisfied with the ending.
No, that's fair. You won't be.
you're not going to be, but I still think they overall did a really good job.
Yes.
Yeah, I think it's safe to say that they did a very good job, even if you're not going to be 100% satisfied with how it all wraps up.
And it reminds me of a thing that really happened in real life that I can't talk about because it'll ruin the movie. So.
Good point. Damn.
Tell you about it later.
Please, I can't wait. No, but seriously, like, this is, I know it's weird for us to be this coy, but we really are recommending this one. Great performances, very interesting premise, very well written. As she said, like, there's the David Rashi character has some really interesting stuff going on with him and is like a really interesting character. But I think that's true of all of them. And, if anything, I could have stood with this being a little longer. And as you said, having more time to dig into what was going on with the, like, the, cause there's three characters in there. There's the two physicists, and then there's a mentally ill guy, right? And I'm not going to tell you why he's there, but there is a good reason he's there. There's two women, one of whom is, I mean, they don't say she's a Black Panther, but that's what they're getting at, mm-hmm. right? She's an old school radical who just, you know, wants to see change however possible. And then there's this woman who's like a housewife. Who just got really involved in anti-war causes, and now she's on a boat with a nuclear weapon, and we never really get to spend any time with her, and I wish we had gotten to, because I feel like there's an amazing story there of how this housewife ended up on a boat with a nuclear weapon, right? You know, they briefly cut away to her husband and two kids.
Yeah.
You're like, what the hell?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I feel like there's more of a story there that I would have been very interested to see. But it's like, it's rare for us to say, you know, this movie could have been longer. But I think in this case, it actually could have. And it might have been even better.
Fine. Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. But really good movie. And it's free to watch on YouTube right now.
Yeah.
Sadly, it doesn't have commercials from 1983. So you're not going to have that nostalgia rush. But it is the whole movie from beginning to end. And... the woman playing the reporter on scene is Roxanne Hart from the movie Highlander.
Okay, there you go.
Just a fun little note. If she was familiar to you, that's probably why.
Okay.
All right. Now we move on to our second movie.
All right. Our second movie tonight is Without Warning from 1994. A news broadcast closely follows the developing story of a meteor which crashes into Earth. And the movie makes a big deal of pointing out that this aired on the 56th anniversary of the broadcast of War of the Worlds.
Yeah.
56.
Weird, weird milestone to celebrate, but okay. It's pretty obvious what they're doing right from the start. It is, I mean, spoiler alert, it is a remake of War of the Worlds. But with a modern twist, it's not just a retelling or anything. It does have its own modern twist. It has its own ideas, absolutely. But the very fact that the way it's formatted and the fact that they're mysterious, that it starts with mysterious impacts in rural areas and then it spins out from there is exactly how War of the Worlds started. And so that's why I say, like, it uses the exact same jumping off point as War of the Worlds and then does tell its own story.
Yeah.
And I gotta say, in the same way, so it's weird because, and I'm not saying this is a lot worse written or anything, right? But I recognized a bunch, and I like really like a bunch of the actors from the first movie, but knowing and liking those actors didn't get in the way of me getting involved with the story.
But it did here.
But in this one, I mean, and this is something that's only going to be me and a couple of other people. Basically, 60% of the cast are people who have been on my favorite TV show of all time, Wise Guy. And so I checked, I'm like, was this cast by the same person who cast Wise Guy? No, but the director had directed like a dozen episodes of Wise Guy. And so obviously he just liked those actors and decided to cast all of the people he liked in it. And it was incredibly distracting for me. Cause it's like, instead of getting involved in the story, which is just not that, enthralling, I kept being like, oh, look, there's Sid. There's Sid again. Hey, Sid. Playing the, one of the physicists and things like that. Like, I'm like, I know I should be more engaged with this, but the movie's not helping me.
That is really a you problem.
Oh no, it's totally a me problem. No. I'm not saying this is going to be everybody, but I'm just saying it's weird that this film didn't reach out and engage me the way the other one did, because in the other one, I had the same exact feeling towards a bunch of the actors, but it didn't distract me there in a way it did distract me here. And I think it speaks to the film not getting, like, not pulling me in the way that Special Bulletin does.
I don't know, because I think the movie is fairly engaging. So I think this is really, it's...
Oh no, totally me.
Yeah, more you than the film. Although what completely pulled me out of the movie was they don't know how time zones work.
I know.
And it's so aggravating.
Yeah, that was a pretty big problem.
Oh my God.
I know.
I couldn't get past that.
Yeah, that was a little on the troubling side.
Because it's not just one meteor strike, it's actually three along the same latitude.
Yes.
So three different places around the world. And so it strikes at like 9 o'clock.
Yeah.
I guess it would be 7 o'clock in Wyoming.
Yeah.
But then the movie seems to think it also struck at around the same time in France.
Yeah.
But it would have been like 1 in the morning.
When it hit
and
in
And they're
France.
Talking to a bunch of people who were out skiing and I'm like,
I know! It's like my husband was out skiing on the hill and he wanted to try the risky hill, but then he got hit by a meteorite. And I'm like, he was skiing at 1 a.m.?
Like, there really isn't even night skiing.
In October?
So it just, like, that was a real problem. But then it's like 10 in the morning in Beijing and it's like, what the fuck is going on with this movie?
That was a real problem.
So, bit of an issue.
Yeah, no, that was a real issue. But I think overall, I found the acting to be more artificial here. Like, I thought the scripting felt less real. I felt the performances felt less real. Like, there's this great moment that we didn't talk about in Special Bulletin, because we don't want to spoil the ending, but it's like one of the anchors has this incredible moment of breaking down.
Mm-hmm.
And it just feels so authentic.
Yeah.
And the comparative moments that happen in this one just didn't feel as real to me.
No, I'm with you on that.
Yeah.
Some of the scenes were much more, I guess, a lot stiffer.
Yes.
Much less natural.
Yeah. That was the issue I had.
That was a bit of I didn't like that much. And just the way they sort of like coordinated and choreographed some of the press conferences.
Yeah.
And not, I mean, I understand that like there's a lot of work involved in trying to get this thing to move the way you want it to.
Right.
And to coordinate all these events that are happening. But it didn't, it just
It didn't feel authentic. You could
sort of see the hand of the director there.
Oh, completely. Yeah. And I mean, I think at its core, it's a very interesting story. And I think it does its reveals really well. Like, cause there's a series of reveals about what's going on. Cause you get meteor strikes and then you get somehow miraculously some people were next to the meteor strike and then they're fine.
No, they're not fine.
Well, not fine, but it's like they're still alive miraculously somehow. And then we get some question about exactly when they were abducted to end up there?
No. Okay. No.
Yeah, that's the part that confused me because you got the little girl who was missing.
One of the survivors is a little girl. And one of the survivors is the skier.
Yes.
The skier just happened to be on the mountain when the meteor hit.
But the little girl went missing hundreds of miles away
by her father 3 days prior. So that's just like dumb luck
that she ended up exactly where the meteor hit.
That's all that is.
Yeah.
The bigger mystery that I found was actually really dissatisfying. When we found out what was going on, was that these people are now speaking in tongues, essentially.
Yeah, they're
they can only communicate in this, like, weird, garbled language that nobody can understand. And when that's finally decoded, it's like, I still don't get it.
Yeah.
I need, like, one of the newscasters has to explain to me what this is. And, like, it shouldn't happen like that.
Well, especially because I actually rewound 3 times. So we get the audio recording of the French guy's voice, right? And you see all of the looks on the faces of the news people, like, I can't believe what I'm hearing.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what are they hearing that I'm not? Because I'm just hearing gibberish. And I rewound it 3 times, and I actually played it in slow motion to see if, like, I could hear what he was saying. But no, he's just speaking gibberish. Why are the characters not acknowledging that he's just speaking gibberish?
Unless they're just horrified that he's speaking in gibberish. That was weird. It was a weird reaction to have. But then, as I said later on, when NASA or whoever decodes the gibberish, it's like,
oh,
I should know immediately what this means. And I still don't understand.
No.
And so you've like delayed the payoff and now I don't care.
Yeah. And I mean, when they explain what it is, that they're repeating words from the gold disc that was on Voyager, that's not really.
Still doesn't.
Yeah.
No, because because when they talk about all the crap we send up into space, just in the hopes that some intelligent life out there might run into it at some point, they talk about Pioneer. They don't talk about Voyager 2. So it's like.
Right.
You're not connecting the dots in any meaningful way here for me.
Yeah, that was kind of frustrating. I mean, you needed a stronger payoff.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
You needed a stronger payoff for the mystery of the gibberish, and the film just doesn't have one. Now, it's very frustrating. And overall, like, again, it's pretty well produced. Like, I think you're right, the staging of the press conference doesn't feel authentic at all. And there's like the scene where the guy goes out and the guy from SETI goes out to yell to the assembled media about what's really going on. I'm like, the way you frame this has no impact whatsoever. And
well, they make a big deal. Like some dude from SETI is rushed from like the middle of friggin' nowhere to Houston to deal with this like, alien issue that's unfolding. Then he either gets shit canned or quits.
Yeah, it's not really clear which.
And then he gives a statement to the press. And I'm like, okay, you're like a hardcore scientist.
Yeah.
Jewish, I might add.
Mm-hmm.
And then you talk about how we're dealing with aliens who have made contact with us and we replied with violence. It's like, what if this had been Jesus Christ? I'm like, there is no way a Jewish
any Jew would ever say that.
Would
I know.
Say that.
Really bothered me. Really, really bothered me that they had a Jewish guy saying, what if Jesus was returning?
Not even the Jewish scientist.
I know. It's crazy. It's crazy.
Like, I understand, like, me, know your audience, speak to your audience, but it's like, I still don't believe that's where you would go with that.
No, you don't buy that. You don't buy that statement at all. That bothered me as well quite a bit.
Right. I mean, I understand why he's very angry that aliens reached out to us to make first contact and we shot at them.
Yeah. Although I gotta say, in the defense of the military, which isn't something I say much, the aliens could have contacted us in a less alarming way.
Well, maybe they don't know how.
Maybe. But they were smart enough to get across, you know, thousands of light years.
I suppose, and pick unpopulated areas.
And pick unpopulated areas to shoot things at. Maybe give people, like, a little while to get used to the first things you shot before you start shooting more stuff.
I just am like, Arctic sovereignty is an issue. I don't know how big of an issue it was in 1994, but you can't just fire a nuclear missile over Canadian airspace and have it explode over the Arctic, which technically belongs to us. So you can't do that. Also,
I don't feel like
doesn't have any kind of sophisticated emergency response organization to assist ships at sea or whatever they were doing.
Yeah, that was weird.
I love that you named Chuck Gander Newfoundland. That's awesome, but
yeah, it was. Although the thing I found funny though, was the maybe well observed idea that within 40 minutes of meteors striking the planet Earth, they would have graphics ready to go. They have like, you know, meteor strike danger. And then like they keep updating the cool graphics, the package over the course of the 2 hours. And I'm like, I gotta say, that is a dedicated guy working in the graphics department. Like literally Earth is being attacked by aliens. And he's like, I know my job. It's getting CBS the right images to put up.
I thought was hilarious was when the guy is one of the astronomers they speak with, he's making his case for aliens.
Yeah.
When people haven't quite figured out what all these meteor strikes are about. And he's like, well, look at this. And he basically just sort of draws a triangle. I know. And I'm like, oh man, this is like conspiracy theory
nonsense.
Level
nonsense. Don't you understand the importance of pyramid power? Because the weird part is when they did the pyramid thing, I'm like, was there like a pyramid drawn, like a geometric pyramid drawn on Voyager or something?
Pioneer.
But then he's like,
it was
a Pioneer. You're right. I keep saying Voyager because that's the famous one, but it obviously was Pioneer. But I'm like,
no,
but then he's like,
there's
a triangle on it. And that's basically the same thing. I'm like,
look, it's the same angles as this other triangle I drew earlier.
Yeah, that was not a good explanation.
That was pretty poorly handled.
Yeah. And I think, but that's indicative of the whole movie. It's like, you can tell that they're trying, but they're just like, they don't have the realism that Special Bulletin has.
But they do have an awesome graphic that says, asteroid, fire from the sky.
Yes, that's what I was just talking about. It was a pretty good graphic, I'm not gonna lie.
Wickedly sensational graphic.
Yeah, again, like that guy should, if Earth survives the alien invasion, which it might, we don't know at the end of the movie what's gonna happen. If Earth happens to survive, that guy deserves an Emmy. A technical Emmy.
The graphics guy?
Yeah, the graphics guy. For doing such great work under such incredible pressure. Yeah.
I thought at the end when they showed what was going on, I'm not going to ruin it completely.
No.
It reminded me of Space Invaders.
Oh, God.
Didn't it?
I can see that. I can see that. Totally.
Yeah. Totally it did.
Invaders. Possibly from space.
Possibly from space. I need an All Rush mixtape and a 2-liter bottle
of
Shasta.
Yeah. Actually, there was one acting choice I did really like in the movie. Mm-hmm. And that was the on the spot reporter who was in Washington DC as the meteor was about to hit Washington DC. Who's like, and who like gets sweatier and sweatier and more desperate. And he's like, at a certain point, he's clearly like just reading a teleprompter. And he's like just rotely saying what's on screen because he's so terrified he can't bring any expression to it anymore. Mm-hmm. I actually did really like that acting choice. That was the one that kind of impressed me.
I just love the idea. Do you see anything? Do you see anything? I'm like, the sky is really big.
I know.
How do you know where to look?
Exactly. It's not like you know exactly where, which angle it's coming from. Oh, well, it's coming from the North Pole at a 45 degree. Yeah, but to someone standing in front of the Lincoln Memorial, that means nothing. Like, right? Telling me, like, even if you gave him an exact compass heading and elevation to look at, he doesn't have a compass heading.
We're the woman in Beijing, where it's daylight.
It's daylight. Like, how are you going to see this?
Okay, look up into the sky and tell me when you see the missile heading towards the meteor. It's like, how the fuck is she going to see that?
I know.
You can't see that. Nobody can see that.
I know. Yeah. So, it's not great, but it is, there is a bunch of fun stuff in it. I'm not going to say I wasn't entertained. I was entertained by a lot of it, but I wasn't so, as I said, captivated that I didn't keep noticing actors I like. Philip Baker Hall is in this as one of the guys at NASA, and he's quite entertaining, but.
John DeLancey.
John DeLancey's in it just randomly as a reporter.
Yep.
Not even one of the key reporters, just nope. A reporter.
Just a reporter.
Yeah, that was fun. And, the two lead news people, one of them is Jane Kaczmarek from, Malcolm in the Middle.
What was going on with the town that got raptured?
That's what I was going to ask you if you had any theories.
No clue.
Okay, because the town closest to...
Nobody ever refers to it as the
again!
Rapture.
The reporter goes walking around the town that's closest to where the American meteor hit, and everyone's gone. Like... Yeah. Like cars are left in the middle of the road with the people gone. Bikes are left on the ground. All of the houses are empty and people have been like eating dinner and watching TV. Like 2,000 people.
People were trick-or-treating.
Yeah, people were out trick-or-treating.
Bags of candy.
Or just lying on the ground. Exactly. And it's like 2,000 people are just gone. And I'm like, what was that?
It's like, did the aliens take them?
Well, but that's why I thought that was going to tie in with the little girl who got kidnapped by her dad. But it never does, because we never find out what was going on.
I never even went that far with it. I'm just like, okay, so we have a town full of missing people, but we don't have similar reports from France or China. So
exactly. So what's going on?
What's going on there? How come nobody once ever referred to this as a rapture? Because that seems like the most...
Yeah, the most relevant comparison.
Exactly. But it never, nothing is ever explained. And that's just, it's very frustrating.
And like you say, it's like, it happens and then it never gets mentioned again.
Yeah.
And you want to be like, hey, maybe we should not assume these guys are evil since they're just, or like going to blow us all up because suddenly they're just grabbing people. Maybe we should just see how this plays out this time. But no, they only want to do nukes. They all just want to nuke
things. Well, I mean, you know, I guess it sort of dovetails nicely with Special Bulletin.
No, it does. It does. Because the Army almost never, the U.S. government and the Army almost never make the right decision. In movies like this. This isn't a Transformers movie, okay? In most sci-fi horror movies, the Army's on the wrong side of things.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, like, there were good moments, and I was entertained by a bunch of it, but this one has so many more problems than Special Bulletin does, and it's just not as effective.
Yeah, I'd say so. I did enjoy both. I think I enjoyed Special Bulletin a little bit more than Without Warning. Although it reminded me of a book I read. I think it's called The Three.
Okay.
Is it? I don't remember anymore. The word three is definitely in that title.
What was the book about?
It's how people just survive a plane crash.
Oh, okay.
Anyway, for whatever reason, it just reminded me of that there are people who have like weird, something really weird happens. There are just a handful of survivors. And nobody really knows exactly what happened with these people and why they survived and nobody else did.
Okay.
And there's just something weird going on. And it sort of reminded me a little bit of that
when,
because we had these two survivors, but then that doesn't go anywhere.
Yeah, it doesn't pay off in any meaningful way.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's fair to say, right? This one is definitely interesting. And if you're into mockumentaries, it's definitely worth watching. Right?
Yeah.
Without warning. But I would say that beyond that Special Bulletin, has all of that, but is also, I think, a legitimately good movie from beginning to end.
Although, without warning, begins, it's a movie of the week with a warning, but it begins with an interruption of a movie of the week.
Yes.
Like, that was very funny. The news broadcast breaks into the movie.
Yeah.
Which I thought I loved. I thought that was great.
Well, what's even funnier is that they cut back to the movie.
Yeah.
And then they cut back again. Oh no, wait, actually this is serious. They give you a little bit of the movie. And then they cut to the desk and it's like, there's something happening. We're going to have news for you at 11. And then you see another 30 seconds of the movie. And then they cut back and they're like, actually no, we're taking over. This is more serious than we realized.
I really enjoyed that.
No, that was a lot of fun. You're totally right.
I also enjoyed the commercials, like actual commercials. I think some of us recorded this off the TV.
Oh yeah. And we're and just so, looking, watching some, on the one on YouTube is just someone's VHS tape from 1994.
It's 2 hours long.
Yeah.
So you, all the commercial breaks are included.
Yeah.
And the mid 90s was not a great era for car design.
No, it was not. Oh God. And I felt so sad watching the ads for like MCI talking about how we're going to disrupt the entire American phone industry. I'm like,
watch out, AT&T. I'm coming for your customers.
And I'm like, oh, poor MCI. Poor MCI, yeah. WorldCom and your famous company destroying fraud.
Oh no.
We all remember how that story ended. Oh man. Anyway, but yeah, I think we can recommend heartily both movies this week.
I'd say so. Just sort of temper your expectations with Without Warning.
Yeah. And they are, again, both available on YouTube right now. So just go and check them out on YouTube. I hope you'll be delighted, but be sure to watch the version of Without Warning. There are like 5 versions of it on there.
You want the 2-hour version.
Yeah, you want the 2-hour that has the commercials. Cause there's one from syndication that's too short and 10 minutes has been cut out. And there's one that's over 2 hours for reasons that neither of us can understand. Like, how is there a more than 2? Yeah, like, how? Yeah, cause it's like a 98 minute movie with like 22 minutes of commercials. So you don't want to watch the 85 minute one and you don't want to watch the 2 hour and 20 minute one. Where a special bulletin you should be able to find with no trouble.
Yes.
All right. So,
and if you have autoplay on, one will play right after the other. So
even better.
You're good to go.
Anyway, do you have any narcissism to watch this week?
I do not.
Okay. Well, I'm just going to recommend everybody check out the Hidden Object Guru YouTube channel. I've been putting up a lot of videos about that Little Hope game that I was very disappointed by a couple of weeks ago. And it turns out most of the internet agrees with me, because it's like literally 95% of the comments are like, yeah, that ending sucked.
Okay. Like, good to know you're on the right side of this one.
For once. But yeah, people hate this ending. And I hope it, like, shocks the game developers. And my channel has weirdly become a place where everyone goes to complain en masse about this ending.
Oh, you know.
Yeah, but it's like, hopefully the developers take note and, like, don't pull this, there aren't really monsters, it was all a dream crap, in the next 6 games in the series.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you've already done it twice, guys. Any more than that's just going to get embarrassing. Is there any other way to get in touch with us?
You can watch the, watch, you can listen. You can visit, oh my
please.
God, the
it happens.
Blog at theava.com. Stream old episodes there. Leave us a comment. Tell us about your favorite fake news broadcast movie. You can send us an email at theava@gmail.com. You can like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter. And if you're listening on an app, rate and review and subscribe.
All right. I'm going to encourage you to do all of those things. But until next time, I've been Count Vargelon.
I've been DM.
Thanks for watching and have yourselves a great evening.
Good night.